Good afternoon. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to share some of the findings from our evaluation of the Aging Well at Home program. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the Harry and Jeanette Weinberg Foundation, who funded the demonstration project and the evaluation, and also express my appreciation to the seniors who participated in the evaluation, sharing their perceptions and experiences. I'm not making money from anyone, not even BU. Nope, is this being taped? Let's see. The strong desire of the overwhelming majority of Americans to stay in their homes or age in place as they grow older presents both opportunities and challenges to our nation's communities. An often cited example is the 2005 AARP National Survey that revealed almost 9 out of every 10 adults age 50 and older prefer to remain in their own homes as they age, and if that's not possible, almost 85% want to remain in the same community. Yet to do so, many older adults, particularly those 85 and older, are going to require the support of family, friends, and the community. The World Health Organization defines an aging-friendly city as one that adapts its structures and services to be accessible and inclusive of older people with varying needs and capacities. In essence, an aging-friendly city offers seniors of all economic means access to appropriate and affordable housing, supportive community features and resources, and adequate mobility options, allowing them to live as independently as possible and to engage fully in civic and social life. Defining an aging-friendly city, however, is much easier than achieving it. I would emphasize that we have seen a movement or growing interest in strategies to transform our cities and towns to make them more aging friendly, both in the U.S. but also globally. And there's been a number of initiatives and pilot projects launched, and one such pilot project is our Aging Well at Home program. So in today's presentation, what I'd like to do is briefly describe the core objectives and components of the Aging Well program and share some data from its evaluation, particularly focusing on seniors' motivations for joining Aging Well and the impact of participation on their psychological well-being. And I'll focus on three core hypotheses. First is that participation in the Aging Well program would lower seniors' perceived stress level. The second, that participation would lessen seniors' sense of loneliness. And third, that participation would decrease seniors' level of depression. The Aging Well at Home program was a 3-year demonstration project of the Greater Boston Jewish Family and Children's Services to support the aging in place of low and moderate income seniors living in a densely populated, age-integrated neighborhood of North Brookline, which is a neighborhood that borders Boston. In its design, the Aging Well program draws upon but adapts elements of Israel's supportive community program, and some of you may be aware of the U.S. Village or Beacon Hill Village membership model. The Aging Well at Home program had 3 primary objectives. The first objective was to offer seniors assistance in coping with the stresses and demands of everyday life, the hassles of everyday life, as well as help in dealing with life crises. The second was to provide seniors with opportunities to build connections or relationships with their neighbors, to lessen feelings of loneliness or isolation. And the third objective was to engage and empower seniors to be active participants in the creation of a more aging-friendly community. Correspondingly, the 3 core components were a community liaison person, a warm houses program, and a community forums initiative. The community liaison is adapted from the Israeli model, and it was the focal point of seniors' interaction with the Aging Well program. The liaison maintained ongoing contact with the participants. He was available to help participants problem solve and develop solutions to life's everyday hassles or challenges, as well as one-time events. The range of activities the liaison provided included information and referral, minor household tasks, repairs and safety modifications, assistance interfacing with organizations and businesses in the community, transportation, and social connection. So the types of things the liaison dealt with range from helping you program your cell phone, how to understand your electric bill, how to move items, pots and pans from that high shelf that your daughter put them on to a shelf where you could actually reach them. So it's a wide range of those daily hassles that make people feel disempowered in their own space. The Warm Houses program also was adopted from the Israeli model. It offered the participants an opportunity to engage with their neighbors of all ages in the warmth of a neighbor's home. Events ranged from informal coffee gatherings to more formal events. The purpose of the Warm Home program was to strengthen neighborhood bonds and offer opportunities for sharing life experiences, but also a place to exchange practical information about community resources. Many of these seniors, when I give demographics, you'll see this, had lived in these communities for a long period of time, but they had seen their neighbors change and had lost friends. So even while they had stayed in place, the neighborhood had changed. The third component were community forums. The community forums were an important mechanism for empowering seniors and actively engaging them in shaping the Aging Well program. The forums served to educate the older adults about possible living options, as well as to encourage them to recognize that they have a voice in shaping their own and their town's future. Initial outreach efforts identified considerable interest in the Aging Well program. However, as you all know, it's a big challenge turning interest into actual enrollment. And this is a challenge that wasn't only faced in this program, but has been faced in the U.S. Village program models and in the Israeli supportive community programs. Among seniors, there's often a strong need for personal autonomy and independence, as well as subtle ageism in our society, which can result in that I don't need this type of program yet, or I'm not ready for this type of service, I'm too young response. In total, 55 older neighborhood residents chose to sign up for the Aging Well at Home program. Of the 55 participants, the evaluation team was able to reach out to 47 by telephone to seek their participation in the evaluation component. We tried to reach each person at least 10 times before we gave up. Our evaluation is based on the 33 individuals who agreed to participate in the evaluation and completed both the baseline in-person interview and a 9-month follow-up telephone interview. Given the response rate, obviously caution should be taken in generalizing the findings, but we think they offer some preliminary insights into seniors' motivations for joining and their experiences in participating. Just a very brief sketch of the participants. The average age was 81. They ranged in age from 69 to 95. 80% were female, 85% Caucasian, 70% were currently not married, 53% lived alone, and yes, they were aging in place. You can see the average length of residence, or the mean residence in their home, was 26 years. In terms of their primary reasons for enrolling in the program, the most frequent responses were they were interested in the idea of assistance from the community liaison to help them manage daily life. They were seeking opportunities for more social interaction and desiring more community activities. Some just had a general curiosity or interest in learning more about the program. Remember, it's a demonstration project. This didn't have a fee to join, so interest brought people in. Some had a view that it could be a useful resource in the future, even though they thought they didn't have a current need, so they might check it out. We had a number of people who were interested in contributing to the program and volunteering and helping others. So they weren't as interested in getting services, they were interested in giving and helping in the community. And some were just simply urged to sign up by a friend or family member. To assess the impact on the Aging Well program on psychological well-being, we compared participants' levels of depression, loneliness, and perceived stress, both pre-enrollment and 9 month post-enrollment. So it was using three widely standardized instruments. We used the 10-item Cohen's Perceived Stress Scale. We used the 20-item UCLA Loneliness Scale Version 3 and the 15-item Geriatric Depression Scale Short Form. Statistical analysis was undertaken using a two-tailed paired t-test, an alpha level of 0.05 was used to determine statistical significance. So, in terms of our core findings, first, hypothesis one was supported. We found participants reported a significant reduction in levels of perceived stress at 9 month follow-up as compared to at enrollment. In terms of hypothesis two, although the difference wasn't statistically significant, our analysis did reveal a trend in the predicted direction of decreased loneliness from 9 month follow-up as compared to pre-enrollment. Hypothesis three, however, was not supported. Participants' level of depressive symptoms did not decline from pre-enrollment to 9 month post-enrollment. We also asked seniors their perceptions of the benefits of the Aging Well program. Had the program made them feel more connected to their neighbors and neighborhood? Did it make them feel safer in their home and neighborhood? More confident that they could get assistance in locating the community resources they needed? Less alone in their neighborhood? And more secure that they could manage living in their current home? And you could see that the majority did support or agree with those statements. There's a significant subgroup, however, that really didn't feel more connected or have an increased sense of self-efficacy from participation. But the majority did report positive perceptions of the experience. Overall, our findings suggest that the Aging Well program was successful in reducing perceived stress. Yet, it was less successful in lessening feelings of loneliness and had no impact on depression. One interpretation for the differential success on these outcomes may be participants' different levels of exposure to the program's core components. The community liaison program was quickly established. The liaison was hired and almost immediately began connecting with seniors, building bonds, checking in, and often providing assistance with daily hassles. In contrast, the startup of the warm houses and the community forums took longer. These two components required a critical mass of participants to begin, as well as relationship building in the neighborhood with the neighbors, recruiting people to host warm houses or events in their homes. Thus, at the 9 month point, the level of dosage for the warm houses or community forums, the components that were specifically targeting the building of social connections, was weaker. This might explain our finding of a trend but weak effect on loneliness. One potential reason for the lack of effect on depression may simply be that the Aging Well program didn't specifically target depression. Although the community liaison could offer seniors information on mental health resources if that was what they were seeking. Yet one of our findings that approximately 18% of the participants scored between 6 and 9 on the geriatric depression scale, a range which is suggestive of depression in older adults, suggests that it might be valuable in the future to have a depression screen in the program and or train staff to better recognize signs of depression in elders. Having demonstrated both its feasibility and community interest, I'm pleased to share, and this doesn't happen often with programs I'm involved with, the demonstration program is actually becoming an ongoing, sustainable, townwide program. It has been renamed Brookline Community Aging Network, or Brookline CAN. It's building on the multi-partner collaboration and the grassroots efforts of Aging Well, combining forces with a very strong Council on Aging and Senior Center. And moving forward, the town has adopted a village model membership framework, but it's, again, adapting it to have a much lower membership fee, making it much more inclusive. The town feels they can do this because they're putting a strong reliance on the use of existing community resources, as well as building a multi-generational civic engagement and volunteer component to it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Two questions about the community liaison. One, now that it's scaling up, what's the proportion of the liaison to the number of people? This was a small person.
Yeah.
And secondly, what training does that person need or have?
Good question. So the liaison person was based on, in the Israeli model, they call it community father, which sounded a little perhaps sexist or whatnot to us. But they have a ratio of 75 elders or seniors to every liaison. So that was what they were shooting for in this project. Ultimately, they felt they could support this model of 1 to 75. Recruitment, it was slow. And so they peaked at 55. But, you know, that was the model. And it seems to work well in the Israeli model to have a 1 to 75 ratio. Second part to that?
What is their training?
The liaison received training from social workers at the Jewish Family and Children's Services and was under the supervision of social workers there. They came from a background in social work, so the kind of background in social work. This man also was a great, quite frankly, handyman, too. I mean, it's an interesting set of skills. You want somebody who has good communication skills that can relate to elders, build trust. At the same time, they had a lot of practical skills, like putting in railing bars, reprogramming phones, all those things. So I think the person who fills that role is critical. You know.
Could I use the chair's prerogative just for one
sure.
question? As you merge to a village model, mm-hmm. I'm wondering what the price point will end up being for membership, since it's often 400 to 1,000 in the villages, and then also how large the group will be.
Okay. So membership is $25.
Per year.
Per year, and it can be reduced. That's where they're working at right now. Right now it is inclusive, so there's no capping model to it because of the belief of being inclusive. Interestingly, the Israeli model, the supportive community, the government subsidizes 50% of the membership costs. Yes?
Again, it's compared to the Beacon Hill model or whatever.
Yes.
Is there a plan to involve volunteer exchanges of reciprocal services?
Right.
Or hiring of a handyman to come and do some of the things that might be.
Right. So some of you are aware of the Beacon Hill model. And it began in, I'm from Boston, Beacon Hill, which is a very wealthy community in Boston. It had a membership fee of about $650 a year. And even with that fee, it really does not support the program. It supports, I think, about 40 to 50% of the cost right now. So I think... there is lots of concern that the first communities that adopted the village model tended to be very affluent communities. I think maybe Chevy Chase here down in the D.C. area has one. But so what really has happened, I want to say it's sort of the second wave of the village model, is it's moving into less affluent communities. And I think your point is that to do that, it is relying much more on volunteer services.
Expanded kinds of supports.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Right. They're not using the concept of banking. Some are talking about banking, so you can volunteer so much and bank and draw on that. But this is an interesting tension.
Well, now that there's a national association.
Right.
And they come in different shapes and forms.
Right.
And
that's, I think, where communities are at right now, is trying to figure out what works locally.
Okay, thanks so much.